Hey there! Pull up a chair next to Dee Fish, speaker, author, business coach, basically all-around professional talker. As he spends a few minutes chatting with some of today's top entrepreneurs, writers, artists, salespeople, and executives, they might discuss their favorite craft brews, or the cutting edge of business technology, or what's playing on their headphones. Who knows where the conversation will take them? So, grab a glass and join us for beer, beats, and business.
Look around with gratitude and understand that there's a lot of good things in your life, whether it's like somebody near you that's close to you, or the fact that you're making beer, or the fact that you've made a major step towards something you've been working on. And it's surprising like how much that's actually cheered me up. You know, I'll talk to an employee and say, hey, you're doing a great job.
That was Jesse Evans. Jesse is the co-founder and CEO of Ale Syndicate in Chicago, the brewers of some of my favorite beers. My name is David Fisher, but everyone just calls me D Fish, and I'm going to be your host today on Beer, Beats, and Business. Jesse, my friend, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful, D. Good to hear from you.
It's good to be chatting with you today.
Yeah, been pretty excited about just the concept of this and just even getting started and being one of the early guests.
Well, we're excited to have you, and thank you for giving us a little bit of, I guess you would call it credibility/style, as you are actually doing your end of the podcast today from a brewery.
Yes.
So
I am right now. We're going to hear a little bit of background noise and do our best with this, but I'm actually in the active production floor of Ale Syndicate Brewers in Chicago. It is my brewery, along with my brother Sam. And every once in a while, we're going to hear a little bit of hissing. Most of the brewing's done for the day, but it looks like we still picked up some activity. So, you know, we'll hear something in the background, but we'll do the best we can with it.
So here's my first question for you, Jesse. Where is the craft beer industry going? Where do you see it going right now?
That's a good question. And I tell you, like, one of the things that I've noticed right now is that in addition to being a brewery owner and trying to get, you know, my product, the Ale Syndicate product, in stores, I'm also really excited to be a drinker of craft beer. So not only do we have, like, great breweries in Chicago, but then we also have access to, like, world-class beers, you know, stuff that's popping up in Colorado, popping up West Coast. There's no reason that anybody, to kind of answer that question, there's no reason anybody would stay 100% loyal to our product or any craft beer product, because the joy of having and enjoying beer is really like trying to cross the whole spectrum, trying like what's hot, what's new. So that could be what's hot and what's new for us or, you know, from any of the other breweries. So that level of proliferation of brands and styles, I think, is the biggest thing that's happening right now.
Well, and that's interesting you say that, because it seems that every time I go to, whether it's get a six-pack or I'm sitting at a bar, looking at the line, the tappers, there's just new stuff coming up all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Do you see that we're going to see more and more breweries continue to pop up? Do you think we're still kind of on the upward slope of that?
Oh, I definitely think that we are. It's funny how many times I've been in a position to answer this question or talk about things in terms of, you know, what does the brewing scene look like? What is the competition that's out there? And really it is like there's a lot of people that are just kind of confused. If you're a normal consumer, I'll do tastings in Whole Foods and you're standing there just like really just like sampling beer with people like, hey, you want to try it out? But very frequently, and I'll get the observation of seeing somebody in the beer aisle, and they're just kind of standing there. They're looking at a long cooler and just don't know what to do.
Well, it's overwhelming. It's interesting because, you know, a lot of the research I do, you know, when I'm looking at marketing, a lot of the research has shown that overwhelming choice can sometimes be bad for consumers because it paralyzes them.
Yes.
Like, in some ways, it was better when there was just, you know, three or four macro breweries. Even if it wasn't good beer, you could just be like, well, I know exactly what I'm ordering, you know, when I get into the bar. Is that a good thing, do you think, for the beer scene to have all this variety? Do you think that there might be challenges?
Yep.
Or
from a marketing perspective, it's a huge mess. And that's what I'm trying to talk about when I'm telling people standing, seeing people stand in front of the coolers just with confusion. But one of the cool things about it is, from a non-marketing perspective, it's wonderful to be able to have all these choices. Now, I'm always pushing people towards really good beer bars and really good retailers. Now, the comparison to wine is really applicable here. There's just there's no way to have tried all of the wineries, to experience that. But then when you get a great, like, sommelier or somebody that's there with you that can kind of guide you through the process, or if you're at a place like a good craft beer bar where you get to try a flight of beers, most of them will do that for you, like little 3 to 5 ounces, six different kinds of beer.
Sure.
That's the way you discover things. So it's a lot harder for people to just shop at, any place that has craft beer where you're not curated. But if you go to a place where you can be guided through it, where you can talk to your bartender. And that's the thing, too, just a quick point about that is the level of education among the people that you're buying the beer from has just boomed.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, just talk to your bartender. If you're at the store, ask them about what's good, what are the complexities, and usually you'll find somebody that is incredibly knowledgeable about it.
Well, I always find the good mark of a bartender, and to be straightforward, I drink a lot of beer, so I don't usually have to ask this question, but I've heard this question asked of fellow bar patrons where the bartender goes, well, what do you like to drink?
Yeah.
And then they use that as a way to go, okay, so you like the hoppy, or you like the dark, or you like sweeter, or you like the bitter. And that's always, to me, a good sign of an educated bartender who's trying to actually connect the beer to the drinker.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. And, sometimes what I like is when people push and suggest. Now, you might not have, you ask somebody, what do you like? Often, people feel intimidated, too. They're like, IPA. That's something I've had, and I know I like it. But then there's styles like Gozas that are, have, a salinity to the beer, almost like a sourness. There's sour beers. There's complex beers that sometimes if you get a chance to try a few of them, you're really going to be surprised what you find a passion for.
If you were going to answer that question for someone, what beer should I start with, or what process should I use to find some beers that I like? Besides going to, a good reputable beer bar or, a good retailer, what would your suggestions be for somebody who's trying to make sense of that huge selection that's out there?
Well, actually, I kind of carry us back to something that we were talking before we, launched into the interview, was the mixed six packs. Going out, going to a store, like almost all the Whole Foods or your major retailers will have an opportunity for you to make a selection of six different beers if you want. And I actually bought one of those a couple days ago from, I didn't buy my beer, but I bought a selection of IPAs. And I was able to just, at home over a day or so, experience all these different ones. So I'd really highly recommend people try out the mixed six packs.
Okay, I like that. Although I have been in a bar with you, I've been in a bar with you many times.
Yeah.
But I think one of the times that stands out is when we were at a bar that boasted over 500 beers.
Yes.
And you picked your own.
Yeah.
And I love that. I'm like, there's a guy who has confidence in his
product. Thank you. Yeah, I also frequently, it's great because that's a big part of what we do in marketing. The product, too, is interacting with those people that are kind of like the tastemakers.
Sure.
So it's really relationship-based. So I'm telling you or, your listeners to, kind of go out and talk to your bartender, talk to the person in charge there, what do they recommend? But then we also spend a lot of time, showing them that we care about our product and, kind of educating them just, a little bit about the story of who we are, but then more about what's specific about our beer.
Right.
What's good, and then that gets repeated, and it's really wonderful.
That's awesome. So besides Ale Syndicate, I'm assuming, is there a glass of Ale Syndicate by you today?
Actually, there is a logoed glass municipal IPA.
Cheers. That is actually what I am drinking.
You're drinking too.
And because I felt that it was important that I go get some of yours for the show today. And I will say that I'm not, you know me, we're going to talk about hops in a second. I'm not a big IPA fan. I like your IPA. I like your municipal. I really like your Sunday Session, which is your session beer.
Yep.
And as anybody who's listening knows, I only give praise to things I really do like.
It's true.
What else do you drink? You know, what are kind of your go-tos besides your own?
Oh, absolutely. So there's a brewery in Chicago called Off Color, and they're making slightly different styles of beer that I really enjoy. So, like, there's some that are like, you know, Berliner Weisses, which are like a sour beer. I'm kind of on a sour beer kick at the moment. But I'll tell you, one of the things that are really neat, and there's the best commercial example of it, is called Oarsman. And it's from Bell's Brewery, one of the great Midwest regional beers. And it's a kettle soured beer.
Okay.
Or a Kentucky Common. So basically, midway through the brewing process, when you're soaking the grains and the malts and everything else, you actually let it almost like sour a little bit, but it's a natural lactic acid fermentation.
Okay.
Before you go through the process of doing the boil, the hop additions, everything else. So it gives it, like, maybe people aren't into like the full sour beers, but they're able to kind of experience a little bit of that. And I think that's one of the more exciting things in beer for me right now.
Cool. All right. What are some of the breweries that you really like? I know you mentioned two of them right there. What are some of your fan favorites?
Okay. Well,
over the years,
I tell you, the Blessed Lagunitas needs no plugging.
Lagunitas. I think I've heard of them. Didn't they just establish, I don't know, a megaplex in Chicago?
Yeah.
I'm being sarcastic. I've been to it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, but it's a megaplex. But the thing is like, they were really the first brewery back in 2003 or something. It was really inspiring me that this could be a thing for me. Now, they do just really heavy hops, so you're not finding the same kind of, like, difference in subtlety. But they've also grown a good business by making a consistent product. So that's always in the rotation. But then I'm much more interested in smaller breweries, like, probably also don't need much plugging right now, but Transient Ales is it's one of the shared space breweries in Chicago where smaller brewers are sharing space, like we have other brewers in our space.
Okay.
But they're not kind of known for the barrel aging and the sours. Very small operation, but just impeccable beer. And then other than that, there's a couple good local favorites like Half Acre. The Daisy Cutter is kind of like the IPA pale ale combo, but it is always one of my go-tos.
Awesome. I want to give a little love to another, a couple more Chicago ones. Is I like Revolution. They make some really good dark stuff.
Yes.
Which is great. And, I know you've done actually, I think, some work with Arcade. Is that right?
Yeah. And actually, I kind of brought it up there a little bit. So there's a couple breweries, and it's the way Sam and I started. We actually had a previous, Sam, my brother, we had a previous brewery, and we were able to start it because we were able to share space out in Oakland, California with another brewery.
Oh, okay.
So we're actually the first, now there's others, but when we set up just under 3 years ago, we were the first one to have shared space. So it's called an alternating proprietorship, which means when another brewery is making beer, they technically own it.
Okay.
But from a liability perspective. So you hear a lot about contract making beers, but this is not that, because we're not making the beer. They're making the beer.
Ah.
So they rent the brew house, have a fermenter or two, and they're able to, like, launch a business without, you know, spending a large sum of money that a brewery costs.
Right.
So you ask about the competitive things. Like, we really have our competitors right here. But then on another way, their Arcade Brewery is the ones Around the Bend, a new brand that's out there here in Chicago. And we've had some other smaller ones that have kind of been through the process here at different times. But they're making beer that is their own vocabulary. And Arcade is one of them.
Okay, so they actually are making beer in your place.
They are, yeah.
Okay, so that's a collaboration. I mean, I get it that it's not you're collaborating with them. They're doing their own thing. But it seems like a pretty collaborative industry in some ways.
Absolutely.
Like where you're helping people out. You are listening in to Beer, Beats, and Business. I am your host, Deep Fish. If you want to reach out to me, please shoot me a tweet at DeepFishRockstar. In fact, send me one right now. If you've got a question, a comment, an opinion, something you want to share, I'd love to chat. Of course, do not tweet me if you're driving. And by the way, if you're enjoying what you're listening to, please go ahead and hit that subscribe button. And also, we'd love a positive rating from you on iTunes. And today I'm talking with Jesse Evans. Jesse is the CEO and co-founder of Ale Syndicate here in Chicago. By the way, Jesse, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and Ale Syndicate?
Oh, absolutely. Obviously, our website is alesyndicate.com. We're on Facebook/AleSyndicate. And then also in Instagram and Twitter of the same handle. If anybody wants to reach me directly on Twitter or Instagram, you can go at AleSyndicateMan, like Superman. So at AleSyndicateMan on Twitter and Instagram is a way to get a hold of me directly.
Sounds perfect. So based on what we were talking about there, I have two questions. First of all, what's up with hops in American craft brewing? Right, I've gone on record as saying not a big hops fan. That's okay. There's a lot of great beers out there with hops. A lot of my beer-loving friends love the hops. But it seems that so much of craft brewing is IPAs and really hop-forward beers. What did that come from?
You know, I think it's fascination. You know, our great kind of like American craft beer pioneers, you know, got the Sierra Nevadas, you know, Goose Island here. But mostly West Coast really were perpetrating this idea of the big hoppy beers called the West Coast IPAs now. Now there's East Coast IPAs, a little more moderate, people talking about Midwestern IPAs for whatever that matters. But, you know, available to a home brewer, and this is kind of indicative of the rise of hops. When I first started and, you know, maybe from the 70s on until that point, hops were like a utilitarian, like, sometimes they would come in like dry brown compressed bricks.
Okay.
Where you know what you got in that package? You got hops.
It's a commodity.
Yeah, exactly. Here's some hops. Brew with those. But you know, we maintain a about 15-foot long refrigerator freezer that you use in grocery stores, full of all different varieties of hops, because it's kind of like grapes and wine. There is a massive amount of variety, and so people like the taste, they like the bitterness of hops, but we raised our stakes up over and over and over again till we got to this point of just an incredible amount of hops and, you know, hopping this in beers. But I think one of the things that I kind of actually talk about our head brewer, Byron Moore, he's been with us for quite a while, but he came up in a really more traditional view of hops and hop procedures. He sees them more as a tool than necessarily like a thing to show off with.
Okay.
So we'll really like, we'll work together and he'll make selections that are, you know, much more complex. You'll get hops that have like notes of garlic in them. You'll get hops that are like more floral, and you want to use them in a way, and a lot of brewers are doing this now, that is a little more sophisticated, a little more like a chef would be.
Okay.
You know, it's like, it's spices.
Right. We had a guest on, Andy Crestedina, who equated the hops in beers are kind of like, because of their you said citrusy or floral, or you said floral,
yeah.
I'm saying citrusy. He's like, it's almost like tea drinkers. You know, tea drinkers.
Oh, yeah, that's like out of control. You know, like, and it's becoming that.
Right.
So it's really exciting. It's exciting for, like, people like Byron to buy, we call it the spot market, where there's usually hop contracts that people buy. So you buy like a year's worth all at once and store in the freezer. A majority of what we work with is called spot market. Slightly more expensive because it's a flexibility to select the right hops we want to use for the beers. So he's really able to go on to some of the central directories and kind of think more deeply about what he wants to do. And what kind of flavors he wants, and it makes things a lot better.
Very cool. There's obviously a lot of complexity to making beer.
Yes.
That I'm sure a lot of people, I think it's kind of like being a musician, right? A lot of times people just look at playing music on stage and go, wow, that must be fun. It must be so easy, and you know, there's no stress or anything like that. What was the biggest surprise for you when you became a full-on brewer? I mean, not even just, you know, a home brewer, because I think a lot of people get into it because they're home brewers, their friends like their stuff, and they're like, well, yeah, I can do this as a business. And then they're like, holy crap, I got a business. What was the biggest surprise for you, kind of like becoming a real, you know, real in quotes, right, brewer or brewery, I should say?
Oh, I can sum it up in one phrase. Where when I was a home brewer and I was working on it, the beer was 100% of everything. You know, you had flexibility and everything else like this. Now when you have a brewery, you know, and we're kind of a, you know, mid-size here in Chicago, it really takes a lot of logistics. It takes a lot of, like, cost. You can't move as fast. But in exchange for that, you really get to make a larger amount of beer and you get to interact with people. So I was surprised how complicated it was. And one of the final things I have to say about that is if I knew was how hard it was, I would have been more scared of it. but I'm greatly blessed with ignorance of the future. So that whenever I get there, and this is conversations we've had, you kind of find out what that next level looks like once you get there.
Right. Oh, no, absolutely. So, well, I'm glad you were too dumb to be scared and made some great beers. I can't believe, by the way, that we've gotten this far into our conversation with me plugging what is actually one of my favorite beers of all time, and that is Richie. And so
yes.
I'm just saying that because I try to mention beers I like on the podcast, so people feel like, you know, if you want to bribe me with six packs or something, feel free. But everybody, if you get a if you like the dark stuff, this is not necessarily a hop forward beer. If you like the dark stuff, the Richie Imperial Porter by Ale Syndicate is fantastic. Jesse, you're gonna have to write me a big check for that plug right there. But freely given.
Can I pay you in beer?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, Richie is kind of like our pet beer. It was the first beer we ever put out, 8.1% alcohol, like smooth as everything. It's how I was able to get Byron Moore to join us because he was like, you know, like, I want to make that beer.
Right.
And, you know, like that that meant a lot. And then, I mean, it's gotten a lot of commercial recognition and, you know, some awards. It's got a really high rating on the great beer and beer advocate. But yeah, it's pretty neat. It's one of the things that makes me proud to be a brewer and an owner.
That's awesome. Well, and to get back to the complexity that it takes, because in fact, I remember, Richie is a seasonal beer. I remember one season, it actually didn't even make it out, right? Because you wanted to do it right. And, it wasn't coming out of the mix. Tasting well. Going back to what we were talking about, starting a brewery, if you were talking to some guy, and I know that you do a lot of advocacy within the community, you're always out talking to brewers.
Yeah.
If you were talking to some guy who's a home brewer, loves it, you know, he's thinking about maybe taking that leap, you've tasted his beer, it's good stuff, what would be the things that you would share with that guy before he made the next step? Like, what would you tell him to do? Or her, right? What would you tell him to do?
I tell you the very first thing is you have to have a partner.
Interesting.
The people that come to me and say, you know, I'm going to start this, I'm like, who are you starting it with? And I think that like, not just an investor, I don't mean that, I mean somebody that's like working on it with me. So my brother Samuel is my co-founder, and you got to find somebody that you can work with, that has opposite skills of you. But the thing that you really need is you need support.
Ah.
Because making beer, making it in an alcohol-related industry with, you know, there is heavy competition. There's a lot of complexities. There's a lot of things from, like, working capital to, you know, the commodities purchases.
To regulations.
Yeah, to regulations. Yes, I mean, we're a highly regulated industry, as, you know, of course it should be. Not arguing with that point. But there is a lot to go through. So my first thing is like, I don't think I should talk. I don't think you should talk about it. I don't think you should do it unless you're doing it with another partner that you can trust equally. I wouldn't want to be alone at the top of this, but that really helps. That's number one. Number two is don't lose the magic of what you're making. So it's very easy to, like, get into this phase where, like, you're trying to figure out the investment, you're trying to figure out the license process, or once you're operating, you are working at looking at sales numbers, you're looking at everything else. And we're really blessed to be in an industry where the end product is so enjoyable to people. And I've seen a lot of other entrepreneurs that, you know, in the beer industry, that whether they're owners or brewers, that are not able to kind of see the forest for the trees.
Right.
And kind of get lost in that aspect.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Any other tips you'd give to budding entrepreneur brewers?
Oh, I have a lot of things, to say, you know, about like dealing with the market, like, you know, trying to strike that balance. You really need to strike a balance between something you enjoy drinking and something that works well in the market.
Mm.
My test for a beer when I make it is to make sure that I never want to go home and not have that beer. Talking about me ordering it at a bar.
Right.
If I had a beer and I was like, man, I'm sick of that beer, you know, that would be disappointing. You really have to hold your product to a higher standard.
Right.
So something that gets you excited and gets you passionate about it.
Well, and that's an interesting way to put it, because that idea of balance between what you like and what is marketable, right?
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes, and this, by the way, I feel goes well beyond beer, right? We sometimes think being marketable is bad, right?
Yeah.
I remember when I was playing in a band and we had this ongoing conversation about would we sell out? And we never got even close to even having to worry about that. So this is a very much an intellectual pursuit only. But I was like, man, you know, if I had to make a product, in this case music, that appealed to a lot of people, and I would get, you know, make a living doing that, and I didn't hate it, like I wouldn't do just crappy music just for the sake of doing it.
Yeah.
But absolutely, like I think sometimes, you know, there's this idea where you can't make something approachable to other people and have it still be good. So I really like your idea of saying, hey, you know what? I want people to have this beer and go, oh, I'd have it again.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I've definitely, and I'm sure you have too, where you even had some beers where you go, wow, this is a really good beer, but I never want to drink it again.
Yes, and that's great, but that is no way, if we're talking business here, that is no way to operate a business. You have to have that engagement. You have to have the passion for it, and you have to understand what people like. But don't tip yourself the other way. Don't tip yourself to trying to figure out how can I make a beer that the maximum number of people like. You know what that's called? That's like. Sorry, we have some noise in the background.
Yeah, no worries.
It is pretty loud in here.
Yeah, it's all right. What are you guys making today?
Trying to be like, hey, I'm on a Skype interview, everybody. we're actually making our first kind of like not a really a contract but a collaboration for a new startup brewery called Caritas, and it's one of these places that is giving a portion of proceeds to charity and is really kind of creating something cool. But their first beer is being brewed today here.
Oh,
so the owner, you know, and Byron have been working all day, but it's a beer that, you know, my brother Sam and Byron designed. It's a Belgian Golden Strong. It's completely different. It's a high alcohol thing, and it's completely different than what we normally make at Ale Syndicate.
Oh, that's fun.
But it's fun for everybody involved.
Yeah. Well, and to go back to what you were saying, I think one thing that you shared with me early on was you found kind of at Ale Syndicate your workhorses, right? And it was municipal. It was Sunday Session, which we mentioned before. I don't know, am I missing any of the other workhorses? Because those are two of them. Palina a little bit.
Yeah, Palina is the brand new one. It's catching up fast. It's a Belgian wit, but we call it a Chicago wit.
Okay.
I was informed, oh my gosh, I'm plugging Byron a lot here. But his joke was, you're welcome, Byron. His joke was that, like, you know, we made it with Chicago water and pay Chicago taxes. So a lot, it's Chicago
wit. There you go.
But it's got a little bit of a difference to it. It's spiced with lavender and a little pink peppercorn, so it's very subtle, but it adds a level of complexity that you would not expect.
Right. But it's interesting because when you have those workhorses, you're also able then to do, you know, some more of the experimental or passion projects. You know, I kind of think of actors and actresses who will, you know, kind of the big marquee names who will do the big blockbuster, make $10 million, and then they'll do two or three indie films. I can't pay them, but
yeah.
That's, you know, they get to do those, I said, more passion projects.
Yeah.
And so.
And that's great because we're doing it in collaboration with them, and this is one of those days.
Well, and you also did one that I really liked, and as you can tell, there's a total love fest here today, but I don't care. And I'm actually forgetting the name, but it was the one in commemoration of the ship that sank in the Chicago River.
Yeah, you know, it's nothing I would have ever thought about. It's called the 844, and this was actually designed by Byron completely. The beer, but it's a Czech-style lager that was 9.5%. And we had it in a large format bottle, but we only made 844 of them, of the bottles, and they were numbered. Now, the reason for that is we were approached by some of the Chicago Historical Society and some of, like, the people that are really kind of concerned about Chicago history, which we love. And it was commemorating that's called the Eastland Disaster, when a ship went down in the Chicago River, 1 year from the Titanic, but it lost 844 lives. And it was a large company picnic for a major manufacturer. It just, the boat just turned capsized. There's a lot of safety features that weren't there. But it really creates a story. It's 100 years ago when we first made it. So it wasn't about like commemorating how many people died, but like their stories. So there was a big push where, you know, we had, like, neck tags that would describe each of the people or some of the people that were first responders. There was a young boy that, like, dove in the water and saved 15 people. Probably didn't look at, you know, a day over 13 or 14 at the time. And just a lot of good stories. And so we're able to kind of communicate those stories through the process. Happened once, but it was a delicious beer and something we really enjoyed doing.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm hoping that you're going to be part of Chicago history for the next 100 years.
Okay, and, we'll see. I gotta get through the next year, but or the next day or week. But we'll just take it one thing at a time.
The joy of being an entrepreneur, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, and I think next time I'm just gonna have to have Byron on the show.
Oh yeah, why not? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, I could talk to you for hours, but I'm going to bring us to the close here.
Okay.
And the one question I always ask to all my guests, if you could give someone a tip to make today a little bit better, what would it be?
Yeah, I feel it so strongly. Just look around with gratitude and understand that there's a lot of good things in your life, whether it's like somebody near you that's close to you or the fact that you're making beer or the fact that you've made a major step towards something you've been working on, whatever it is, just give it a little bit of focus, and it's surprising like how much that's actually cheered me up through the process. You know, I'll talk to an employee and say, "Hey, you're doing a great job," and mean it, and you know, because I'm really grateful that they're around. So just a little bit of gratitude, no background to it, just a little bit of gratitude for where you're at and what you've accomplished so far.
I love it. Perfect, Jesse. Thanks for being with me today.
Hey, I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and speak.
Thanks for stopping by today and listening in. You can find show notes and links for this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. You can also share this episode through social media and leave reviews through iTunes or any of your favorite podcasting services. If you have feedback, leave DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And of course, we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.
I'm D. Fish. Thanks for joining us today.
As a guy used to know back in the sales world always said, it's all blocking and tackling, blocking and tackling.
That's right. I definitely could use some tackling right now on people.
Well, unfortunately, OSHA has some problems against tackling in the workplace.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm going to tackle people on the outside. Strangers.
Hi, how you doing? I'm Jesse. Wow.
Yeah, bam.